time check. It's 8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
Live from the National Studios in Broadcasting House, my name is George Asikri with this edition of Behind the News, where we bring you latest updates and detailed analysis of current happenings in the country. Tonight, the consistent dip in the policy rate by the central bank. Who benefits from all these reductions? Cabinet approves fiscal responsibility bill for legislative consideration. Is this the beginning of an end to fiscal indiscipline? We find out. And minority in parliament condemns raid on residence of former power minister Dr. Kwame Nadonko, describing it as an attempt by government to silence vociferous NDC activists. Stay tuned for the next 1 hour as we bring you details of all these stories on our show tonight. Our text line is 0266-946-1. The Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of Ghana earlier this week reduced the policy rate by 150 basis points to 21% from 22.5%. The governor of the central bank, Dr. Ernest Addison, cited declining inflation rate, positive economic outlook, as well as increasing economic activities as basis for the reduction. That notwithstanding, some industry players, despite welcoming the consistent decline, have over the period decried the unwillingness of the central commercial banks to also reduce their lending rate to correspond with the cut in policy rate. So how are industry players once again reacting to this latest rate, which is one of the lowest in recent times? And who actually benefits from all these policy dip? Joining us on the line is the president of the Association of Ghana Industries, AGI, James Asare Eje. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News. Hello. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. We have a little challenge with the line there, but we shall try and re-establish contact with him. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana.
It's probing, it's intrusive, yet exciting. Your daily news analysis program, Behind the News, is on Radio Ghana at 8 p.m. sharp, Monday to Friday. Join the crew and be part of all the interesting analysis and hard interviews on your exciting Behind the News. Also heard on Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, Sunrise FM 106.7 in Cofodia, Radio BAR 93.5 tonight, Radio Upper West 90.1 in Wa, Volta Star Radio 91.1 and 91.3 in Ho, Obonu FM 96.5 Tema, and Twin City Radio 94.7 in Sekendi Takrade. And remember, we are on GBC's unique FM 95.7, which is online via TuneIn Radio.
Register and pay your TV license fee anywhere, anytime. Pay your TV license.
Welcome back. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. We have back on the line James Cesaria G. He's the president of the Association of Ghana Industries. Good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening and good evening to your cherished listeners.
Well, we've had consistently a reduction in the policy rate by the central bank. Now it's 21%. To what extent should we be excited?
Thank you for having me. Sorry, the line is not too clear, but I'll do my best.
Right.
Actually, I think it's a healthy situation if we see macroeconomic indications or indicators actually pointing to the positives. In the past 6 months, you would agree with me that we've seen some level of improvement in the business environment. You would agree with me the drop, in the policy rate consistently in the last three MPC meetings, we've seen quite some significant drop in the policy rate. We have also seen a sharp drop in the treasury bill rate from the 23% to the current about 12%. Inflation has consistently been coming down. And these are all signs which are good for business. What is worrying to the private sector and industry in particular is the kind of levels of interest rate or cost of doing business that we are still enduring. We are not seeing the correlation between, I mean, policy rate coming down and interest rate by the commercial banks. And one would ask, why is it that policy rates are going down, but then it's not affecting interest rates significantly? These are issues or questions that we need to interrogate. So AGI has been asking that what can be done, what are the various indicators that go into setting the interest rates that we have in our various commercial banks.
Some of your members might be excited by this news and probably will want to go in for a facility. When they get there, they are faced with the old rate. And so, as major industry players, have you contacted government on this matter?
Yes, we have been dialoguing with government. We have been holding discussions with the central bank. But I think what we need is a bigger platform where industry, the central bank, and the commercial bank come together at a table to look at the input in determining interest rates. Let me quickly mention that in the sub-region, Ghana seems to have the highest interest rate. And this then reflects in the cost of doing business in the country. It makes a lot of businesses uncompetitive, especially when we are looking at export markets. And hence, being able in manufacturing to really retool and expand becomes quite difficult. The way forward is to be able to interrogate what are the various inputs in building up the cost of credit in the country. And here, AGI has persistently been calling for some level of regulation. We are not calling for control, but then there should be a ceiling set above a policy rate for which commercial banks cannot go. Now, we know that in some jurisdictions, and quite recently, the example of Kenya comes to mind, that a legislation was passed such that you cannot charge beyond 5 basis points, you know, beyond the policy rate. Now, here, what we are talking about is that if the policy rate is 21%, as we are seeing now, can we have a situation where no bank can charge more than 25% in cumulative interest rate? And I think these are the things that would really make the seeming macroeconomic stability meaningful to the private sector in the country.
Analysts are forecasting that the reasons given for the reduction there's going to be a further reduction in the coming months. And so, for you in the business, so
yes,
far,
right.
Are your members in any way impacted? That is, those who are already in business.
Have you?
Those of you in business already, has this reduction in any way played any major role in your business?
Is it on the side of
whether good or bad?
Or
yes,
our pricing.
Your pricing, in particular.
Well, but I mean, may I know the one I'm speaking to, please?
George.
Yeah, George. You know, in your introduction, you did indicate. I mean, you stated clearly that despite the consistent decrease in policy rate or reduction in policy rate, it has not really reflected in interest rate significantly.
Yes.
So definitely, if we are not getting that significant reduction in interest rate, you would not also be able, I mean, to input that into your pricing mechanism. And the question is that is why I asked the question, what is happening? why are commercial banks reluctant, you know, to also respond appropriately when we see that the cost of borrowing from the commercial banks, the cost at which the central bank lends to them, I mean, reduces. And in this case, in the past, again, let me, if I'm right, in the past 6 months or so, it moved from 26% to 21%.
Yeah.
Why are we not really seeing that corresponding or even bigger, I mean, cut in interest rates? Hence, businesses would not be able also to translate that into their pricing. And it becomes a cyclical effect which really affects everybody in the economy.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Very grateful, Sam.
Thank you, George.
James Asariyeje is the president of the Association of Ghana Industries. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Also joining us on the line is the president of the Ghana Union of Traders Association, GUTA, Berima Dr. Amiya Ofori. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, my brother.
How does the news of a new cut in the policy rate come to your association?
Well, thank you very much and good evening to our listeners. And let me say that the policy is a very good direction that we are having this event. I mean, it's a welcoming news. But the bigger question that we need to be asking ourselves is that...
Nana, can you please speak up for us?
Well, good evening to our listeners, and let me say that the cut in the policy rate, that from 23.5% to 21%, or 22.5% to 21%, is a very welcoming news to all of us. But it is a bigger issue that we always have as a private sector organization, is that, is it having an impact on our day-to-day business activities or not? It is not, because any time that Bank of Ghana comes out by reducing the policy rate or the base rate to any level, it should have had a correspondence reduction in the commercial banks' interest rate. But in this situation, it is not reflecting on the private sector. But any time that Bank of Ghana comes out with a new policy, we expect that at least the commercial banks, even though they are dealing with money, they are doing business with money and are making, you know, some sort of profit, we believe that it must have a correspondence reduction in that policy rate. And that is what we are not feeling as a private sector. And for me, I believe that even though the Bank of Ghana, by an act, an autonomous body, but we believe that government should intervene, because if we are going to say always that, oh, the Bank of Ghana is an autonomous body, and for that matter, decides on their own and do everything on their own. If anything pressing happens or anything happens, what people are thinking that it's the government who has allowed the commercial banks to increase their rates. That's against the reduction that we are feeling. So we believe strongly that when the Bank of Ghana comes out of their policy rate by reducing them, the commercial banks should also be forced to also reduce their interest rate. Because if a businessman is paying about 35% interest rate per annum, it is very difficult for you to, you know, break even in terms of the business activity that you are performing. Mind you, there are other costs relating to the business that you are actually doing. And so if the bank interest rate alone is taking about 35%, at what margin of profit are you also going to put on the project execution, on whatever you are selling?
But the counter argument, if for instance the commercial banks should agree and also cut down their interest rate, you in business will not, by virtue of that cut, reduce prices of your produce, will you?
Well, have they done that to test the waters? If they have done that to test and the results is what you are actually telling me right now, then we might have a case, or they might have a case to present. But as we speak now, we are telling them that they should do that to actually see what the private sector will also do, whether we are also going to reduce our waste or not. Because all the business that we are doing, I mean, we are doing it on cost. And every cost means something to the private sector businessman. And so they should challenge us that we are going to reduce it by coming down. But in fact, my brother, the crux of the matter is that even they should not even come out with this argument, because if you want to come out with that argument, then Bank of Ghana should maintain the base rate or the policy rate at that 25.5% when we were having it at that high level. If that's what they are seeing. So does it mean that the difference between that base rate, which was supposed to have been 25.5%, and the banks were charging 35% interest rate, which when you did your mathematics, you are getting about 10.5%.
Yeah.
Now it's 21%. So how much are they getting?
But they have explained in the past that your members, I mean the ordinary persons, have gone to the bank to borrow money, and because the policy rate was high, a lot of non-performing loans were in the system, and so it made the banks to incur some losses. And so if they should correspondingly reduce their interest rate, they are going to incur some losses.
I'm very grateful for that issue that you have raised. Let me tell you, if the banks have a serious monitoring and evaluation department, which will go out to go and then maybe check or inspect projects, then in the first place, let me ask, are we saying that when the banks give out loans, they are to stay back in their offices without going out to go and inspect actually what that loan was intended for? Are they doing that? If they were doing it, because the moment you give out loan facility or over the facility to a private sector businessman, by virtue of that, you have a contract with a person. So you must also go out and then see whether the loan that was assessed is actually being used for the intended use. If not, and you are staying in your air-conditioned offices in Accra and saying that, oh, let's leave them to go and do their... Sometimes this private sector business might need even some sort of technical advice, which will actually make them do what they are supposed to do. So by assessing the loan and then going out on the project to go and work without going to check, to me, it's also something that the banks should also be held accountable.
Okay.
So you cannot tell me that after I've taken the loan, I should not be inspected by your bank. You shouldn't come to my... All that you need is accrued interest. That is all that you need. But you are not mindful of my business. You don't care about whether I use the money to go and buy a Mercedes-Benz car or a Prado car or whatever to, you know, use it as fancy. Is that what you want as a bank? So most of these unserviced debts that are coming from the private sector, the banks must also be held accountable.
Okay. Nana, I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. We are very grateful.
I'm also grateful to you. Thank you very much.
Nana Berima, Dr. Miyao Ofori, is the president of the Ghana Union of Traders Association, GUTA. Also joining us on the line is Dr. Lord Mensah. He is with the Department of Finance, University of Ghana. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to Behind the News.
Yeah, good evening, sir, and good evening to our listeners as well.
Sir, how relevant is a dip in the policy rate that does not lead to a corresponding reduction in interest rate by the commercial banks?
Yeah, it is relevant because if you take the policy rate, you know, it's basically more or less inflation target-based, and in the end, the banks have they have a general formula that they use to calculate the base rate of the bank. And in the end, they will add some premium to it, which will go for the credit risk premium of the individual or the entity that is borrowing. Now, we ask ourselves what goes into the policy rate. You will see monetary policy rate and bank-specific characteristics variables also in that base rate. So that is determined. So that's clearly spot on when you go to the bank. But then you're looking at hiding behind the credit risk, which the banks perceive that the borrower might not be, the moral hazard is very high. At the same time, the adverse, the likelihood of not selecting the right people to lend to because of our problems with our address system, our problems with keeping records in terms of our businesses. I'm talking about data. So that is where the banks have been hiding behind. But then, let's have a look at those four consecutive times that, monetary policy rate has been reduced.
Yeah.
It gives a signal. It gives a direction that interest rate is definitely bound to go down in the near future. So if you ask me for me to do an active management, then I would like to lock all my funds in loans as we speak now, most chunk of my funds in loans as we speak now. So if I'm able to bond the borrower for maybe the next 5 years at a certain level of interest rate, with anticipation that when interest rate comes down, it will not affect that, agreement that we have. So I will make profit out of it. So I will say that it's about time the banks realize that, obviously we are working towards times that interest rates are likely to come down. So there should be a reflection of this reduction in terms of interest rates that, they charge on the loans or pricing of loans. So in effect, I'm expecting this impact, to have, this reduction to have impact on the bank's lending rate if the banks have been active in terms of management of the people's funds.
What then explains the contrary? Some 5-6 years ago, when the policy rate started going up, the commercial banks quickly increased their interest rate. But when it is going down, it is a different story.
Yes, because when you look at reduction in interest rate, it's quite difficult because reducing interest rate is more or less a loss of fund to the bank. And the bank will always protect themselves from this downside, risk where interest rate keeps on coming down. When they lend funds, what they want, they will earn on it will be very low. They will protect that side. But then in the end, if it goes up, the motivation is there, because that will give them, more funding. So if interest rate goes up, it gives more or less, an asset boost to the bank if you look on their balance sheet. And then when it comes down, it lowers their asset, generation in terms of interest. So every bank will be reluctant to, more or less reduce reduce interest rate. And if it happens that they should increase it, they will be motivated to do that. So that is a generic thing. It won't happen to only Ghanaian banks. It's a general bank management technique that is adapted across, the industry. So I will not sit here and say that it's peculiar to only Ghanaian banks. The banks are always looking for profit.
Okay.
Once interest rate goes up, it's a push to their assets. But if it's coming down, it's difficult for them to reduce because they know their asset value will come down.
So will it be fair for one to say that the current dynamics, it is a way of enriching the commercial banks at the expense of the ordinary person, the business community?
Well, I will not jump into that conclusion because of the way the computations in pricing of loans, the way they go about it. Like I said earlier, there is a base rate that determines, bank-specific base rate. But then there's a premium they will require on this base rate, and that is borrower-specific. So if they realize that the borrower can expose them more in terms of their funds, I don't expect that they are likely to reduce that interest rate. So, but then because, the credit risk component is a problem in this country in terms of identifying the borrower, in terms of the businesses, the business the borrower is going to do is not monotonic. The borrower can change the business at any point in time. They foresee that to be the main component of the risk. And that is where they hide behind for not reducing the interest rate. Because obviously if they are going by their formula, if the monetary policy rate is reduced, the base rate will obviously reduce. But then what is left is the credit risk component. And that is where you know, they find their fault by arguing that, you know, the system is not that clear and the moral hazard is very high. At the same time, adverse selection is high for them, so they will not reduce the interest rate.
Doc, do you foresee a further dip in the policy rate?
I do that. I do foresee that because, like I said earlier, if the banks are really doing active management, this is the time they better lock their funds into loans to bond, you know, borrowers for the next 4 years when we anticipate, you know, policy rate coming down every quarter.
So if I were into, say, treasury bill business, now it has dropped down to about, in fact, very, very, very low, that I will not be making any much profit. Here am I. I cannot also go and borrow money to start business. Maybe probably if I was given 23% and now I'm getting 12% for TB, how do I then start anything? Will it be wise, for instance, to go for a loan in anticipation that the rates might come down?
Well, it won't be wise to go for a loan as we speak now, because if you don't take care, you're doing much of the work for the banks, which at the end of the day, the business might not be growing because you use all your, you know, profit paying interest on the loans that you've accrued. But then if you look at the future in the near term, I think in a year or two, you should be fine to start up with a bank loan. So I would say that if you're a business person, just hold on with your TBO as we speak now. You know, enjoy that 12% for some time. And I think in the near future, the rate will come down.
All right.
It will be attractive for you to borrow from the banks.
Doc, we are very grateful. By enjoying 23% and now 12%, it doesn't sound well.
It is difficult then, but then it's better than nothing.
All right. Doc, we are very grateful. Dr. Lord Mensah is with the Department of Finance, University of Ghana Business School. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. Also on the line is a banking consultant, Nana Otu Echampong. Good evening, Nana, and welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Should we be rejoicing that for some time now, the fourth time in the year, the central bank has been dropping the policy rates?
Oh, yes. It's good news. Good for business. Good for the economy. If we listen to the analysis that led to the reduction, they said there are positive signs in the economy. It's picking up. All the targets are on course. And so it must be good news for everybody.
But when you say it's good for business, what does it mean? Personally, when I heard the latest one, I quickly went to market to see if I could buy some one or two things. Prices, some are actually on the rise.
You shouldn't expect such instantaneous reflection. As I said elsewhere, normally when you increase interest rates, then you get instantaneous reaction where the rates go up. But when you reduce, you don't get that because there's a time lag because of the components of coming up with interest rates. There are at least three items that affect the setting of interest rate, and that's one of the reasons why you don't see an immediate reduction when you go to the market. Once in the cost of deposits that the bank secures for the operation is set on a term basis. So you get a one month fixed deposit, 2 months, 3 months, and even up to a year. And therefore, if the policy rate you think is reduced, there's no way you can go to your depositor and say, you know, you sign a 6 month contract, but the policy rate has been reduced, and therefore I'm going to reduce. So the cost of deposit mobilization is still there. Then secondly, there's the issue of non-performing loans. Now, these also affect the cost of doing business for the bank. And yesterday, the central bank confirmed that the ratio is now 21%, which means for every 100 CDs that a bank gets, they only have 79 CDs to, you know, operate with. The other 21% is a cost. So that, again, affects the interest rate and the rate at which they can reduce. Then the third is the operating cost of the bank. The bank operates. placed in a situation where they buy IT software, they have staff, they pay rent, and when you reduce the policy rate, it's instantaneously. You cannot reduce salary for staff. You cannot reduce the rent that you pay, and so on. So all these are factors that affect the determination. So in the short term, we don't see that, but in the medium to long term, they do go down.
But in the short term, will it be fair to say it is quote unquote the cuckoo season of the commercial banks?
Oh no, I wouldn't go by that, because if you take the three factors amongst many that have enumerated, you will see that it's no cuckoo season at all, because
they are no longer spending so much on generators because Dumso is no more a major problem. So the cost of that has gone down. And they are
What about rent? What about salary? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not that as soon as you know the policy rate goes down. Because what is the policy rate at any rate? That is the rate, the theoretical rate at which banks borrow between themselves or from the regulator. And so, really, it doesn't mean much to us. But then, it's a benchmark. So that benchmark rate, we expect that it to synchronize with the real world. And so that's why I'm saying, if you look at the APR that the Bank of Ghana publishes regularly from January to now, you see that the cost of loans have been coming down. They haven't been rising. And that is reflected in those figures.
Nana, we encourage students and the youth in particular to invest under the circumstance. If a student wants to invest, should he go in for TB or fixed deposit?
Well, it has to be normally that is giving investment advice, and that is regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission.
So okay.
Over the phone, I do not give that advice.
All right. We want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Very grateful, sir.
Pleasure.
Nana Otuye Champon is a banking consultant. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. Still staying with economics, fiscal deficit as a result of fiscal indiscipline as over the years, especially during election years, contributed to the erosion of macroeconomic success chalked up in previous years. The more than 12% fiscal deficit recorded in 2012 scuttled the 14% economic growth achieved in the previous year. Since 2013, the previous government tried to reduce the fiscal deficit to about 6%, hence one of the reasons cited for the IMF extended credit facility. After spearheading the campaign to cap Ghana's fiscal deficit as a percentage of GDP, Cabinet has finally approved the submission to Parliament, the appropriate legislation for the passage of the Fiscal Responsibility Bill into law. The proposed amendment to the Public Financial Management Act is expected to limit the fiscal deficit to between 3 and 5% of GDP from 2018 to ensure greater fiscal discipline in the economy. So how feasible or practical will this be if we have this Fiscal Responsibility Act coming to force? Joining us on the line is Dr. John Gatti. He is the head of the Department of Finance, University of Cape Coast Business School. Doc, good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening and thank you for having me.
If the current trend is that we are not disciplined when it comes to managing our finances, will a bill be enough to solve that problem if it becomes a law?
Well, the bill, if it becomes a law, is good to guide us, but it is not enough to make us disciplined. It is not enough to make us do what is supposed to be done. We can use some countries, Nigeria, for example, but they have this, but they are in financial difficulty as we speak. If it comes to our own country, you realize that in the old law of the Bank of Ghana...
Doc, your voice is a bit low, if you can speak up for us.
So I was saying that if you take the Bank of Ghana, for example, in the old law, it was stated that the central government can borrow from the Bank of Ghana not more than 10% of the previous revenue collected. But you realize that we were not obeying that, even though that was captured in the law. So putting in the law as to what your fiscal deficit is supposed to be, good intention, but if it's going to be complied with, that depends on the discipline of the government, and that discipline of government depends on many factors that confront government from time to time.
And I believe sometimes it is context dependent. Using hours, the challenge we have at this stage of our development, is it feasible to be disciplined and still achieve what we want, bearing in mind the unpredictable things that we do get?
Well, that continues to remain a challenge because you have no control over commodity prices internationally. When there is volatility, they affect revenue stream for the country. And that also affects ability to stay on course. We also do have some internal difficulties in sense of the way we campaign in the country. In trying to go by our campaign promises, we tend to overlook the fiscal discipline rules that are already started in various laws and that are also enshrined in different conventional documents for the country. So these will continue to be challenges that will face us as a country. Of course, it is true that if we go to some OECD countries, the first fiscal deficit to GDP around 3%. So if we want to do 3 to 5%, it is not an easy thing that we are actually telling ourselves to do going forward. And also, pegging fiscal deficit to GDP, while your tax revenue collection or your revenue collection so far is at the threshold of 20% of GDP, that is also a challenging matter that will confront the country. Okay. So the intention is right. The implementation depends on the discipline of the managers of the economy, and their discipline also depends on other factors that we have to watch as we go along.
Doc, should GIFMIF, for instance, if strengthened together with the Fiscal Responsibility Act, be that complementary in terms of their role, or the Act should either be subordinated to the bill or the vice versa?
Well, I think the effect implementation of the GIFMIF depends on the determination of those who are managing the affairs of the state from time to time.
Doc, your voice is going low.
Hello?
Yes, better. Yes, I can hear you now.
Yeah, I'm saying that the benefit of the GIFMIF system also depends on the commitment and the determination of the managers of the economy. There are very clear things that we are supposed to be doing. For example, when activities and programs and projects have not passed through the budgetary process, there is no reason why they should be executed. So this clearly, even though you have the GIFMIF system, if the determination and commitment is not there for those who are supposed to supervise to ensure that they don't happen, and when they happen, punitive measures are actually given, then we cannot actually say that the GIFMIF system will actually solve all the problems that we have leading to fiscal indiscipline. So the whole thing depends on the commitment of all of us who are involved in the chain of activities leading to fiscal prudence or otherwise.
So, Doc, some people have talked about the balanced budget system, which in some jurisdictions they run. I don't know details of this proposed bill, but is it likely to be a form of a balanced budget regulatory system that we're trying to run?
No, the moment you are picking fiscal deficit to about 3 to 5% of GDP, it's not a balanced budget. But the point is, you can peg your fiscal deficit to GDP of around 3 to 5%. But even though we believe that pegging it around that level, 3 to 5% or 5 to 6, 7% is good for the country, but we also need to recall the fact that the problem that we have been facing in this country over and over, even during periods of high GDP growth, is as a result of low revenue mobilization. It is low revenue mobilization in the face of expanded expenditure that creates problems for us. So if we just pass a law and without putting in place the mechanism, the effort that is needed to expand the revenue stream, I do not think that we will be able to comply with. Just as I told you, that there are other laws in this country. I talk about the Bank of Ghana law that talks about borrowing from the central bank to a certain percentage, but we have been flouting this rule from time to time. All the governments have actually flouted this rule.
Okay.
So we will need to look at the real issues and not to think that passing the fiscal responsibility law will mean that our problems will be solved.
All right.
Lies with the managers of the
economy.
How we can carry the nation along to understand that if there is a difficult time, there is a need to moderate on the demand of things to be done for us on the executive. So those are the things that will help us to live within our means.
All right. Doc, we are very grateful for your time on our show tonight. Dr. John Gatti is the head of the Department of Finance, University of Cape Coast Business School. Also joining us on the line is the head of the Department of Finance, University of Ghana Business School, Professor Godfred Bokwin. Prof, good evening and welcome to the program.
Yes, good evening, and good evening to our cherished listeners.
Prof, it's a law, and in this case, a fiscal responsibility bill, if it becomes a law, would that be enough to cap fiscal deficit?
It's a good step, but not sufficient in itself to address our problems. I can understand that we needed something like this. We have talked about that time and again. But again, Ghana's problem is not necessarily lack of laws or enactment or something. It's more about compliance. Our laws are observed more in breach than in compliance. I mean, the degree varies too with different political parties that have been in power. I mean, when it comes to NPP and when it comes to NDC, the degree varies in terms of the extent to which they comply or abuse the system. So that is also a fact. But I think that at this stage, one will not be able to judge the effectiveness of that law or bill until we get to know the content.
Okay.
Until we get to know the content, what is in the bill? So that is what would inform us our position or our analysis whether this will overall serve the common good. Because if there are no sanctioning regimes well spelled out, okay, in it, then it will just be, then it means that the incentive to comply with the law will be very low. And therefore, the cost of disobeying the law when it is small compared to the benefit of disobeying the law, then people will choose disobeying the law. And that is what we have seen in this country. We have seen laws that are being disobeyed, but the punishment is far less in proportion to the gain from disobeying the law.
But, Prof,
yes.
In a developing economy like ours, needs are many and genuinely so. And so if government is overspending, we say it is fiscal indiscipline. But if the government is overspending in areas that matter, should we be worried?
Certainly, you have to be worried if government is overspending even in the right way, there is a cause for concern. It's not that exaggerated compared to when government is overspending and it's a bit reckless. That is the issue. But I think that there's a conventional wisdom in ensuring that your deficit is below a certain point. Because even for the so-called developed countries, are increasingly concerned about the level of deficit. Because the deficit has to be financed. And the fiscal deficit is an indication of the borrowing requirement of the government. So anytime the government runs a budget deficit and even doesn't say that it will borrow, it's almost predictable from the deficit that the government will borrow this amount. So there's a reason for that. You see, if you look at the rationalized macroeconomic convergence of the for the ECO, there is a fiscal deficit limit that member countries are supposed to achieve in order for the common currency to come to place. I think that's about 3%.
Yeah.
We have argued in the time past that that 3% is not in line with our developmental challenges, because we cannot have a fiscal deficit that is 3%, almost like within the EU, where in terms of the infrastructure, they are at a certain level, and therefore it may be necessary and good for them. So we cannot just copy like that. Can we increase that a bit, because we have a huge infrastructure deficit that needed to be closed, and given a dwarfed revenue envelope, there will be the need for us to accommodate a reasonable deficit to be able to go forward. But my brother, the problem in our part of the world is not so much of this deficit, it's how the deficit came about. The source of the deficit, the kind of project we have done. And if you look at the role of elections in deficit creation in our part of the world, it's worrying. And election year expenditures are not necessarily for productivity growth.
Okay.
That is our problem. We tend to be physically disciplined in between elections. So you'll find that just after election, look, check from 1992, the budget soon after every competitive election has been austerity budget, has been a budget predicated on fiscal consolidation, meaning that there were some excesses,
okay,
there were some imbalances that needed to be corrected. So in the time past, we have had to spend about 12 months just to correct the excesses or the imbalances created as a result of the previous election. But you realize that because the economy has gone through this over the years, it's now taking us more than a year. So as we speak, Ghana hasn't fully recovered from the election excesses of 2012. It was the 2012 elections, occasioned largely in the last quarter of 2012, that took us to the IMF program. So we ended the 2012 election with a fiscal deficit of 12.1% of GDP. We were not able, and then we went into a protracted court issue for about 8 months. I mean, I've heard people say that that didn't have, well, certainly had some effect on us.
Okay.
Why the gains may be in terms of the electoral reforms that came with it and all of that, but certainly something had to give up.
All right.
Because there were quite a lot of people who go to work only to go and watch TV. And at the end of the month, they will take their salary. What is the accompanying productivity?
All right. I want to thank you very much, Prof, for your time on our show tonight. Professor Godfred Bokwin is the head of the Department of Finance, University of Ghana Business School. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. And to some politics, the minority in parliament has expressed displeasure with the action of the police service to invade the private residence of the former power minister and member of parliament for Puru East, Dr. Kwamina Donko, in search of documents relating to the Ameri power project. The minority leader, Haruna Idrisu, in a statement described the incident as shameful and sad, raising some concerns regarding the modalities by which a member of parliament can be investigated. The minority leader explained that all available documents concerning the Ameri project had been given to the government and therefore described the invasion of Dr. Kwame Dankwa's residence as an attempt to intimidate members and a ploy to stifle the progress of democracy in the country. Joining us on the line is the ranking member on communication and member of parliament for Sanerigu, Alhaji ABA Fuseni. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Yeah, good evening and good evening to your listeners, George, and all your colleagues at GBC.
Very grateful. Why will a state institution doing its work in accordance with the laws of the land be described as an attempt to stifle the progress of democracy?
Thank you very much, George. There's a saying that when you know somebody in the daytime, you don't light a torch to identify him in the night. By the actions of the MPP, everybody knows them for what they are. That when they are in power, they try to bastardize and abuse state institutions. You know, not too long ago, I'm sure we are all witnesses to the kind of lawlessness that was unleashed in this country. And then, as a result of which they use state institutions to try and free their members. Ordinarily, one would have no problem with members of the NDC being investigated because all of us are law-abiding. This is a law-abiding political party. And as a government that has just existed, we are committed to ensuring that lawful orders are complied with. And so let it be made abundantly clear that the NDC and the minority in parliament are not opposed to any lawful act of getting its members subjected to lawful invitations to cooperate in the process of establishing the proof or otherwise about institutions of state. We are not afraid one bit to account for the stewardship we have held in the last 8 years, because we are proud that it's a proud legacy we have left in this country, which will be unmatched.
Indeed, how can the raid on Dr. Dankwa's residence be described as unlawful?
I'm just coming to that. You see, we are in a law and order society. We are not in a jungle. We are not in a banana republic. We are not in a failed state. There are processes that are spelled out in the constitution and the laws of this country about how to go about this. So even the mere possession of a court order is not enough for you to just go and raid people in their homes, especially when these are sitting members of parliament. The constitution of this republic and the laws of this land spell out clearly the processes that they ought to undergo if you want to either effect the arrest of the man or even solicit his participation in an investigation. There are processes that you need to go through. And as a government, we expect that the government should be the first line of order in respecting the laws of this country. They know the laws of this country, yet they chose to brazenly send people to go and invade the privacy and invade the privacy of individuals.
But once they had a court order, that was enough. That's legal.
It is not. Are you telling me that a court order is just enough if you were given a court order to go and invade the premises? Let us assume of the president. Can you just get up and go and do that?
The president is different.
Why is it different? Is he not amenable to the laws of this land?
He is, but whilst in power, you cannot take legal action against
him. It is the same constitution that grants the president powers. It's the same constitution that insulates members of parliament. Are you saying that parliament is an inferior institution? Are you by any set of logic trying to say that parliament is an inferior institution?
Not at all, but
the speaker. So tomorrow, if they want, they can go to a speaker's house, raid his private residence, and carry out what they call investigation.
Are you saying that upon reasonable suspicion, a member of parliament cannot have his or her residence raided, even with a court order?
I am saying that the law of this land prescribes how the residence of a member of parliament or anybody so authorized by the law can be entered into, or how his cooperation can be solicited. So, in the first place, let's go according to the law. Number two, when they went to the honorable member's house, they said it was in connection with a charge of causing financial loss. I'm sure I'm correct on that, am I?
Yes. That's correct.
To arrive at a charge for causing financial loss, it means that you must already have assembled the requisite level of evidence for you to arrive at the conclusion that that person is complicit in the act of causing financial loss. Is that not it?
You can also suspect without having enough documents.
No, that if you don't have evidence, on what grounds did they arrive at the fact that they are charging him for causing financial loss?
That is the epistemological search for evidence.
No, I'm saying that then you are fishing for what the lawyers call fishing for evidence, which is not accepted in normal judicial practice. It is not. Because it simply means that you don't have evidence and you are going down to try and get people to incriminate themselves for them, for you to then use it as basis for evidence. It's fishing for evidence. And I'm telling you that they themselves said they have arrived at a point where they think they can charge the honorable member for causing financial loss. So they must have had enough evidence. So what are they doing at his place? So it is nothing but a raw attempt to instill fear, panic, and terror in the minority, so that the current manner in which the minority is holding this corrupt government, this government that is full of lawlessness across the country, the length and breadth of the country, the manner in which the exposure of this government within 6 months for various acts of corruption, now they are seeing that many more Ghanaians are beginning to appreciate that not only is the NPP incapable of fulfilling the myriad of empty plethora of promises they have made, but that they are becoming more corrupt by the day, more lawless by the day, and the more the exposure comes, the more they get exposed. And so they are trying to get at members of the minority who are at the forefront of these exposures in the belief that they can intimidate and petrify the minority into inaction.
All right.
My brother, like I've always said, you don't frighten a chief warrior with a mustache. That is his trademark.
But you can frighten him with a court order.
I'm saying that the court order doesn't give you the automatic right to do what you please.
All right.
I'm saying that the court order is not enough.
Okay.
That is just what I'm saying.
Aladji, we want to thank you very much.
You need some other steps. You need to take some further steps to be able to get to where you want to get.
I thought you have said that if you are talking of evidence, he good, you come by holding the balls. And so if you are looking for evidence, you go and take documents. That is...
Yes, the same documents I have to go, we don't know contain in the handing over notes. They are superintending the ministries, department, agencies. They are in government today. And all the available transactions, and they were talking about America. All those transactions they did in respect of America were given to them.
All right.
And this is a government that even set up committee. Philip Anderson, the failed MPP, Asfaran Fosu, Glotte, they set up this committee. They have got up the taxpayers' money, and they have not been able to produce it.
All right.
I didn't know the people who said that the Anderson committee has given them all the evidence that they need.
Very grateful.
To go ahead with the prosecution.
Very grateful, Aladji. Our time is up. Well, thank you very much for your time. Aladji ABA Fusain is a ranking member on communication and member of parliament for San Nerigo. We had booked the honorable member for Odotobri. He is the acting chairman of the Mines and Energy Committee of Parliament, Emmanuel Jemfi. He agreed to talk to us, but as we speak, we are unable to contact him, even though he admitted he is in his constituency. So probably that explains the challenges with the lines. Some of your text.